Yeah, that surplus keeps growing like a McDonald's sign, only it says billions and billions, not serving anybody.
James with the line of 2024. Well, we got to capture that one. That's a good one, James. Always love my conversations with James Wigerson, his great work, Life Under Construction, a sort of look at politics and a whole lot more. And I've told James this before on the show, his travel writing. James, have you ever thought about doing like the travel thing? Because you and your lovely wife, Doreen, you take great trips and you document them in the highlights and the lowlights sometimes of your experiences traveling around the globe. Ever think about doing that sort of as a putting a travel book together?
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that. We are currently exploring doing some sort of video series on travel and also doing more travel-related writing that would be related to those videos.
Yeah, you should. You're good at it. All right, let's talk politics. A big year in Wisconsin when you talk about the Supreme Court race. Big year in politics. We have a new president. Let's stay in Wisconsin for the moment. There's a couple things I want to get into. The one is, we know that last time in the Supreme Court race where liberals took over the court in Wisconsin, getting the power back from conservatives, we saw record money spent in that campaign. And I've said this, I'm not breaking any news here, and you and I have talked briefly about this. This will be the highest fundraised, money spent, ad-driven Supreme Court race in U.S. history. Of that, there will be no doubt. At the end of this process, James, looking ahead, how is that going to feel, and what do you think that result will be? Will we see conservatives take back the court? Brad Schimmel, will he take back the court?
Brad actually has a very good chance. In many ways, Brad has avoided the whole MAGA politics because right after he served as state attorney general, he became a judge, and so he managed to avoid some of the more controversial political issues in the last few years. He actually has a really good chance of making his case. He's run a statewide race before. His last race for state attorney general, he barely lost. He could have asked for a free recount and didn't. He actually showed more class than a few politicians in Wisconsin history on that. And he's a very capable politician. He's from Waukesha County. He can generate the vote there. It's going to be very difficult for Democrats to beat him. And the one thing about Schimmel has been he has not been afraid to go ahead and accept Republican money, not just spent on his behalf, but he's willing to take their donations. And that's been a mistake in other Supreme Court races on the conservative side. This is going to be a tough battle for the Democrats. And like you said, it's probably going to break records for spending nationally.
We know that the current makeup of the court is you know, looking at cases related to abortion, some of the school-related issues. Do you think, given that this race won't be settled to the latter part of the year, do you think that those issues will be, as much as they can be, settled when the next court, if Brad Schimmel wins, a conservative-leaning court, takes those positions?
I think that if Brad wins, that the liberals on the court may try to wrap things up a little more quickly in order to prevent him from taking office and deciding on those cases. One of the big issues that's going to be in that court race is Act 10. And Act 10 attracted national attention back in 2011 when it was first proposed, and it attracted all sorts of money from outside of the state and all sorts of activists from outside of the state. So imagine now that we're heading into a state Supreme Court election where the Act 10 could be an issue. It will be an issue, actually. And I would imagine that labor unions and the Democratic left are definitely going to want to try to keep control of the Supreme Court in an effort to have Act 10 thrown out finally.
Neither one of us are lawyers or attorneys, but I guess I'm going to ask this question anyway, because I'm always curious about this. There was a carve-out for public safety folks in Act 10, right? We know that police and fire, other people related to those positions, weren't impacted by that act in the state of Wisconsin. And it has caused, in some places, heartache for communities, large and small, trying to budget effectively when one segment, a really important segment, given how much attention public safety gets, are trying to manage budgets with a tight fiscal restraint of the rising costs of everything. We talked about inflation a lot over the last few years. Given that, is there, do you think, again, from a non-legal perspective, because we're not attorneys, is there an argument to be made that Act 10 had a carve-out and maybe shouldn't have?
Well, it probably shouldn't have, but there was an example down in Ohio where public safety officials were included in their union reforms that were passed under Governor John Kasich. And what happened is because of that, the public reacted accordingly, and they were concerned about their public safety, the fire department, the police departments across the state. And they ended up passing a statewide referendum that rolled back the reforms that the Republicans passed in Ohio to control the state employee unions because, again, like I said, they were afraid of possible police strikes. And so we had that example ahead of time when we passed Act 10 here in Wisconsin. And really, the interesting thing to me about carving different groups out and the argument against it is we did not grant union rights to state employees carte blanche. It was one group at a time. One year the teachers unions got it, and another year it was a different group of public employees. So if you're saying that we have to do a carte blanche now, everybody's included once, then it probably shouldn't have been constitutional back then when we did it piecemeal.
When I've talked to legal experts, I do it most Thursdays on the Political Power Hour, they've always said, well, much of this sort of court-centric activity related to these big cases, big issues in Wisconsin, is because the legislature has not come to agreement between a governor that's a Democrat, legislature for the most part in the last 10 plus years that's Republican-led, and that sort of, what's the term, sort of messy public work on behalf of the taxpayers in the legislature means the court has to decide these things. Maybe, and again, maybe this is wishful thinking, maybe the legislature sees this as an opportunity to sort of clean things up. Now, having said that, we still have a divided government, and Tony Evers, last time I checked, with slimmer majorities in the Assembly and Senate, is probably not going to look kindly on any efforts by Republicans to sort of, in their mind, clean things up. What do you think?
Right. I don't think that you're going to see anytime soon Robin Voss proposing that the police unions are included, for example, in Act 10, because for one, the police unions have now become part of the Republican coalition, and two, it wouldn't pass anyhow because there's no way that Tony Evers would allow it. Tony Evers is not going to allow that fix. That he wants that flaw as his crowbar to try to get rid of Act 10. And then, of course, like you said, we have the dysfunction between the legislative branch and the executive branch where they don't trust each other. It goes back to when Tony Evers first took office, the Republicans tried to curb some of Tony Evers' powers, and then there was the whole recording of a meeting between Evers and some of the legislators. It's not a good situation, when you have that kind of situation between the two branches of government, like you said, you're going to push where you can to whatever power center will give you what you want. And what's happened is that the courts have now become that power center that will either give conservatives what they want when they're in the majority or liberals what they want when they're in the majority. And that's where the push is right now, because that's what's capable of swinging back and forth.
Which leads me to the question, I think that it'll be a lot of Democrats' mind, a lot of Republicans as well, is will Governor Tony Evers decide to run for re-election again? If you were a betting man or you were to guess today on what you know, and he hasn't said a ton about this, I don't know if he said anything about it, you think Tony Evers will be running for re-election in 2026?
I don't think he's going to say anything until after he gets through this budget process, because if he says something, it's going to cause the Republicans to entrench themselves even further than if they run the risk of Tony Evers running for governor for re-election. But Tony Evers is 73 years old. he'll be 75 when the next election comes around. While he seems to be doing well with his health now, he has had health problems in the past. I just can't imagine that him running for a third term. It's very difficult for a Wisconsin politician to stay in the public eye that long. Scott Walker certainly failed at it. Tommy Thompson was the exception to the rule. And even then, when Tommy Thompson attempted to make a comeback years later, the voters were done with him. After a while, you wear out your welcome with the voters, and I think that Tony Evers is smart enough to recognize that he will be wearing out his welcome if he attempts to run for a third term, and that there will be a move for a change, especially at his age, which the voters are not going to forgive him. And keep in mind that there are other capable Democrats just waiting to run for governor, and Tony Evers is probably not going to stand in their way.
You want to give me some names?
Oh, I think Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson is definitely got to be a contender. You also have to look at Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. There's no way that Josh Call wants to stay there forever. And you could even make a case that if Ben Winkler doesn't become the Democratic National Committee Chairman, he might consider a run for governor or some other office, because how many years is he going to sit as the chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin? He's a young man and he's got ambition. He wants to do things too. So I would say definitely I would put Johnson first, Call second, and Winkler third as your likely candidates. But you also have a Secretary of State, Godlewski.
Mm-hmm.
She's ambitious.
Yes, very, very ambitious.
Yeah, more ambition than capability, but she definitely is looking to do something bigger than the office that she's holding. So there's no reason for Evers to look around and say, well, there's nobody else that can do it. I guess I'll run again.
Well, a different party, but if you use the Scott Walker example, going from county executive to governor, David Crowley just went back and got his bachelor's degree. I wouldn't be shocked if he threw his hat in the ring.
Yeah, I would imagine that he and Johnson are probably going to work that out ahead of
right.
time, because they don't want to split the Milwaukee vote.
No. Coin flip?
That's going to be an interesting discussion behind the scenes between their advisors. But clearly, I think after the Republican National Committee convention in Wisconsin and other events that have promoted Johnson to the public eye, I would think that he would be the candidate that would emerge from those discussions.
I know what I want to ask you before we shift this, a couple of national ones. This just drives me nuts. We have a surplus in the state of Wisconsin. We all contributed to that surplus. They've used it in some ways to carve out some money for other things. At any point with the divided government of Wisconsin, will we see something in the form of a rebate or a tax credit for the taxpayers, folks like you and me and everybody else in between and beyond, where the folks who paid that money into that surplus, which is now years upon years of growing, I think it sits at $4 billion today, we'll see some of that money back.
Yeah, that surplus keeps growing like a McDonald's sign, only it says billions and billions, not serving anybody.
James with the line of 2024. Well, we got to capture that one. That's a good one, James.
I would just say that, you know, we were talking about the dysfunction between the legislature and the governor. It would seem to me that there would be a very easy compromise, that the Republicans would get some tax cuts that the governor is not in favor of, and that the governor in turn would get to spend some more money that he would be in favor of, and then in the municipalities and the counties would get more money in shared revenue, and that giant surplus that's just sitting there doing nothing would actually be spent down to a reasonable, it was supposed to be a rainy day fund.
Yeah.
Well, we're now prepared for the worst typhoon that could ever hit the Wisconsin coastline.
Yeah, with zero likelihood of a typhoon, which is even more interesting.
Yeah.
Let's shift to a couple national things. I'm fascinated by the relationship between soon-to-be President's 47, yeah? Is that right? Yeah.
I've lost track.
Yeah. Somewhere in the 40s.
Doesn't help me when they skip a turn.
Yeah, I know. Donald Trump and the richest guy in the world, Elon Musk. Now, they've fought recently over all kinds of things. The special visas is a more recent one, although they seem to be on the same page again, although there's still some side conversations happening there, I'm sure. And other things related to space technology and all the things that Elon Musk is involved in. Certainly TikTok is one that Donald Trump has flip-flopped in the last year. How would you describe that relationship? And does this relationship, this is the bigger question, have any chance at all, I was going to say chance in hell, and I'm, matter of fact, I'll say it, any chance in hell of surviving the next 4 years of the Trump administration? Elon Musk and Donald Trump.
Well, I think there's a good chance that it could survive on these grounds, is that Musk seems to have a number of agenda items that will only happen as long as he has that proximity to power. And whether Musk likes it or not, he's not the one who's president. Trump is. So he needs Trump to do what he to do the things that he wants. So there is that the relationship between the supplicant and the prince.
Mm.
Even though that Musk is the, you know, he considers himself the smartest man in the world, and he is the richest man in the world. So he has that presence, that importance, and he also, I think, inflates his ability to understand how government works, because he just assumes that because he's a genius in some areas, he's a genius in every area of life. I really don't think that as long as Musk has those interests, the self-interest in mind, plus, you know, his bizarre racial theories and whatever else he's exploring lately, he's going to have to just bite his tongue sometimes and just have to live with Donald Trump being the one that's in charge.
James, I spent some time on the program recently talking about the two biggest stories politically of 2024. I'm going to lay them out, and then you can tell me if you agree or disagree. One was, and I'm kind of excluding the election because that's always a big story when it happens. We only have them every 4 years. The disastrous debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, which changed the trajectory of that race completely and resulted in Kamala Harris getting the nomination. And two, the attempted assassination of Donald Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania, which sort of propelled Donald Trump, I think, to sort of an image that I think many Americans, some who have maybe didn't vote in previous presidential elections, said, that's my guy. Do you agree with those, or do you have different ones?
I would take it in a different way. First of all, on the subject of the assassination attempts, there were a couple of assassination attempts made against President Gerald Ford, for example, and that didn't seem to help him get reelected. Teddy Roosevelt famously got shot while giving a speech in Milwaukee. Well, that was when he was running as a Bull Moose candidate. Literally got shot, continued his speech, and still was not elected president. These incidents happen during the course of a campaign, and especially in our fast-moving news cycle, it seems to change from hour to hour. I tend to discount the effect of the assassination attempts. I'm much more interested in how Donald Trump managed to rehabilitate his image with the Republican Party. And maybe that's not a biggest story in 1 year. Maybe that's the biggest story in 2 years or 4 years. But we're seeing this rise of this authoritarian who's making promises that it's basically destroyed the conservative coalition that was governing the Republican Party and has taken over the Republican Party. And this time around seems to have complete mastery of the party. I think that that's probably the biggest story that comes out of all this. And the assassination attempts seem to be just part of that rehabilitation story. The other big story that I would say is the failure of Democrats and Never Trump conservatives and just in general people opposed to Trumpism to work together and to come together as a coalition to stop Donald Trump from getting elected again.
So
we just saw a failure at every level, from from the courts to the Attorney General Merrick Garland and our own Attorney General here in the in Wisconsin, failures to prosecute people that were involved in the attempt to overturn the 2020 election. It just seems to me that it was very interesting to watch us as a country just kind of roll over and go, it wasn't a big deal. And 2020 was the January 6th insurrection. Just doesn't matter.
Some of which you wrote about in the most recent issue of Life Under Construction, at least the failure of Never Trumpers. Where can people find your great writing, James?
They can find it at jameswigderson.com. They can click on the button and it'll tell them how to subscribe to a newsletter that comes out every Monday and Thursday.
All right. Final Decision Wisconsin podcast of 2024. My guest has been James Wigderson. Life Under Construction is his great writing, his great work. James, I look forward to many future conversations and good health for the both of us, and happy New Year to you and your families as we look ahead to 2025. Thanks, James.
Thank you, Steve. Looking forward to the new year.